time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 14th of September 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 14th of September, Jan Scott talked to Em Burrows about the Waiheke Walking Festival, Rhiannon from Waiheke Library and Dan Harrop from Holiday Helpers.
And now it's my very great pleasure to say good morning and welcome to Ian Burrows, who's here to talk to us about the Waiheke Walking Festival. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, Jan.
Right, so how's the organisation for the festival coming on?
I'd like to think we're all under control. I think the funding is now sorted, which is good news.
That's great.
Denise Whitfield, who's organising it for us, seems to have it all under control.
That's great. And, of course, it runs from the 26th of October to the 3rd of November.
That's right. It's over 9 days, and we've got about 38 walks over that period of time, so there's a fair bit going on.
Gosh, yes. So you would need an awful lot of volunteers, I would expect.
We do. I think last year there were around 100. Denise is now on the lookout for those that would like to get involved this year. There's a few of us on the trust that are getting involved, the people who've done it before that are getting involved, and she's looking out for some newbies to get involved, I guess.
Okay, so if anybody out there is interested, how do they contact the
Probably best to festival? Ring Denise Whitfield, who's the coordinator, on 7797 at home, or her mobile is 021 071 7213.
Right, and can they also access it through the website?
There's plenty of information on the website. There is a contact us button, for want of a better word, on there. If you go to www.waihikiwalkingfestival.org, you'll find a very comprehensive website that's been set up in the past that we've recently updated. It'll give you details on all the walks and what's coming up.
Excellent. So we'll cover the volunteers again just before we close, so that anybody out there who's interested will know how to contact you all. Now, what sort of level of fitness do you need to go on these walks?
For anybody, really designed for anybody, from any level of fitness, from easy to slightly harder, I think is the way they've been defined on the brochure. So there's some nice, gentle one-hour ones catering for an older part of the community. There's some pretty good hikes for those that want to do a good workout across the island or around a peninsula or whatever. There's even a run in there for those that want to run. There's half a dozen kid-friendly walks for the ones with buggies and so on. There's a couple of doggy ones in there.
So there's something for everyone.
There is something for everyone. There's even the Friends of Dorothy walk is back again. There's a few involving vineyards. So hopefully we're catering for everybody's tastes.
Right. Okay. So give us an example of the easy ones and the hard ones.
Easy ones and hard ones. There are a couple that are described as walks for health. One goes round the Esplanade. Waiheke Physiotherapy are doing this one and another one, which is the Anitangi Beach Magic, which is more of a stroll along the beach there, and then a coffee at Charlie Farley's. So they're really catering for those that just want to get out, have a little stroll, get some fresh air. If you want to take on something more challenging, there's a few of those. There's a cross-island walk, which will involve the zip line for those that would like to give it a go. You can join me to come around the Tifau Peninsula for about a 3-4 hour walk around there, involving a bit of clambering, a bit of wine tasting, bush walks. You can have a crack at The ones out on the far end. There's a Tamatakou to Orapu one. There's walks around the headlands at Church Bay with Graham Henry. So the website identifies all the different type walks. There are ones that are grouped together as the longer walks. There are those that are grouped together as the shorter walks. There's different theme ones.
So they all start from different places and finish in different places.
They do. We've geared them up so that they start ideally from where a public bus can get to, because obviously not only are we catering for those on the island, we're trying to cater for those coming across by ferry, either Fuller's, who are one of the major sponsors, along with the local board, or through SeaLink. So we're starting from bus stops where we can, so people can catch the bus from the wharf and then get off at the appropriate bus stop. Where we go further afield, so out to Tamatakou or places like that, then there is buses that will be laid on with a small charge made for those.
And where will those buses leave from?
They again will start from the wharf, so people can get to the walks from the wharf, or obviously if they're an islander, make their own way to the starting point that's clearly set out on the brochure.
Right. And the buses that leave from the wharf to go to the more far-flung places, will they stop off at, if somebody flags them down?
That's a good question, actually. That might be one for Denise to look at. At this point, as far as I know, the plan is to start at the wharf and get to the far end. But if somebody wants to make arrangements, then perhaps call Denise and we perhaps can pick up on route.
Right.
There are a few buses that we're chartering effectively that will start at the wharf and head to the non-public bus stop, shall we say.
Right. So how many walks are there altogether?
38. There's a fair few. I think there was about 39, 40 last year. We had over 2,500 walkers do it last year.
Gosh.
We're looking to try and maintain that level this year with a view to perhaps growing the festival next year as part of the local board's desire to get the Round the Island walkway up and running.
Right. And are these walks all on public land?
Some of them are on public land. All the walks are free. There are several on private land. We've been very fortunate to get Bruce Plaisted to open up three of his walks around the Rarohara area that he did last year. We've got Rob Fenwick opening up some of his land up around Tamatuku. Man o' War are allowing us to do a walk right across their land for the festival finale on the Sunday. And that will start at Stony Batter Car Park, and then that lands up down at the tasting room. We've got access to land on Kennedy Point through John Hudson and a few of his neighbours around that area. So it gives people an opportunity to get out and see some parts that they wouldn't normally be able to do,
yeah.
As well as using the walks that are there and that are looked after by the local board.
Mm. Yes, indeed. That's a great idea. And the walks on private land, are most of them sort of fairly easy to do? You don't need to be super fit to do
them? You don't need to be super fit for some of them. Some of them, I think the Man of War one is graded as medium looking at the brochure in front of me. The ones around the Kennedy Point I think is probably a bit easier, and that one probably involves a glass of wine or possibly two. That's the one that John Hudson's looking up. The ones around Bruce Plaisted's ones are graded a bit harder. We've got a night walk there to go and look at his glowworms. And the ones that are more twilight and medium to hard, I guess, so that probably slightly easier because people can see where they're going, whereas the harder ones probably it's going to be a bit more challenging. So torches are recommended, I think, on that one.
Right. Now, the guides that take these tours, how many do you have per walk?
There'll be probably one or two. I mean, for instance, I'm doing the Tifau one. I'm the guide. Gary Wilton, who works for the council through the Parks Office, who many of you will know, is leading quite a few of them. I'm assisting him on the ones with Graham Henry. There are other specialists in terms of the Waiheke physiotherapies. We've got Rosie Walford doing the biomimicry one. We've got Janet Hunt doing the Tamatuku to Warapu one, along with Barbara Breen, who's local on the island as the marine biologist. So it depends on the walk as to how many guides we need. Mm. We do need volunteers. We need the tail end Charlies, as they're affectionately known, to bring up the rear and make sure we don't lose anybody.
Yeah, very important.
Yeah, a very important role. Yeah. As I said, there were about 100 volunteers last year. The benefit of being a volunteer, I guess, this year will be joining us for the end of the festival celebrations at the Man of War tasting rooms,
right.
Which we will hopefully open up to sponsors and people from them.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that the number of volunteers you need depends on the number of participants too.
Well, as I said, we're aiming for about 2,500. The walks themselves, the numbers are governed a wee bit by how many people you can get on a bus in some cases. I think we're sort of aiming at 40, 50 per walk. Some of them can take more. I think there was one last year that had a fair few more than that. Denise is in the process of trying to ascertain how many volunteers we'll need for each walk. I mean, we've already had three walks that are now fully booked. You have to register on the website. I suggest people, if they want to do it, get in there soon, because the marketing and the publicity is now getting out there.
Mm.
And most of the walks were full last year, from what I understand.
Did you have a lot of people coming over from Auckland for it?
We got quite a few from Auckland. I think there were, when they did the analysis last time, there were people from 12 different countries. I think we had people from Canada, from Australia. I think there were a few Poms there as well as obviously the Waihikin, the Aucklanders. There were people from Canterbury and so on. We're in the process of trying to be able to analyse that a bit more this year as part of the funding that we've secured from the local board, and that's why there's a few questions on the website, just to give us an idea of where people are coming from so that we can feed back to the kind sponsors.
Right. And I noticed one of the walks on the 27th of October is a Nordic walking trail session. What's that involve?
Yeah, now that's something I must admit I've never done. I've come across Nordic skiing, but I think it's a way of using poles to walk more efficiently. It was something that they ran last year, and June Stevenson is doing two of them again this year, one on the 27th for novices, for those that have never done it before. And then there's a coastal one on the 28th for those that are a bit more experienced. So if you'd like to get your poles out, come and give it a go.
Right, exactly. Yes, I hadn't. I wondered about that Nordic walking. Yes, with those ski pole type things.
A little bit like Nordic skiing. So I'm assuming it's a similar sort of thing, except you haven't got skis on your feet.
Well, that sounds like fun. Yeah, that does sound like fun. And walk to the top of the world now. We're at Passage Rock.
That's a Passage Rock, yes. Now, that's one where you literally, I think, go to one of the highest points on the island. It's a walk I'm very keen to do myself because it's one that's been sitting there on my to-do list and I've yet to do it, so I've volunteered to help on that one.
And it does say the grading, it's hard.
Yeah, that one, I think if you read the back of the brochure where it talks about grading of walks, I think we've sort of say the grading reflects the types of terrain and walking services you can expect. All of Waiheke is hilly, in some places very hilly.
Yes, so that's right.
I think the hard list tries to reflect the level of hill. Always amuses me when you see people going to do the cycle around the island because they just see this nice round roadway going around the island and then you find them at the far end absolutely bright red in the face and struggling.
Yes, there's not a lot of flat land on the island, really, is there?
No. I think Blackpool's about the only place, and a bit of Onitangi.
Now, we must talk about sponsors, because they are most important to the success of the festival, of course.
Indeed. We've got two key sponsors, the Waiheke Local Board, who have funded the event in the past, along with the City Council, with all the restructuring that's been going on there. The sort of total amount of funding that we've been able to secure through that is down on what it was. However, it's a very generous contribution, and that's just been received in the account, which we're very grateful for, as we're starting to get costs to pay. Likewise, Fuller's have supported it for the last few years, and they have been very generous again this year in terms of cash donation and marketing, branding. Their brochures are on the ferries. There'll be the big banners going up shortly. There'll be billboards in their offices in town and out here and stuff on their TV screens on the boats. I've got to make a plug for the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust, of which I'm the chairperson. The trust has underwritten the festival for the last year and agreed to underwrite it this year and then got asked to take it on to make sure that it happened, because Janessa Reeve, who had done it previously, was unable to do it this year, and it was something that sort of came under the auspices of the trust that we thought it was worth doing again to make sure that it's happening. We'll have a review of what we do next year, and then there's an awful lot of other people that are also donating prizes, sponsorship type stuff. So again, plugs for SeaLink, who are providing ferries across for some vehicle stuff. We're hopefully going to get TVNZ over with the weatherman. They'll bring the trucks and stuff over. There's some prizes that are up on websites at present. We've just raised some funds through a trade me auction, I think it was, with some accommodation. And Stay Waiheke have been very generous in providing some of that accommodation. There's a lot of local businesses, the likes of Tefal, EcoZip, the Dead Dog Bay Sculpture, Garden People, Peacock Sky, Man of War, Casita Miro, Goldie, Kennedy Point, Mudbrick, to name but a few. Badge King providing us with badges. There's probably some other ones that I'll remember in a moment, but they're all being very generous. New Hope have just given us some money. You might have seen that announcement to help prizes for kids on the half a dozen kids walks that we've got.
That's great.
There's one going out on Halloween night, so it'll be a slightly probably more pleasant Halloween walk around without having to knock on houses.
That'll be good fun.
Apparently.
Yes.
Yeah,
no, yes.
The guys that are organising that are specialists at this kind of thing, from what I understand.
Okay. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, your community radio station. This is the Island Life programme. And we're talking to Ian Burrows, who's involved in organising the Waiheke Walking Festival, which is happening from the 26th of October to the 3rd of November. And has got well over 30 walks involved for all ages and abilities, from easy to really hard, and a great variety of walks. Ian, you mentioned your involvement with the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust. Is that how you got involved with the walking festival?
It was. I was asked to join the trust about 6 months ago. There have been a few change arounds in people that involved. Chris Palmer had recently stepped down, and people who were involved needed more hands on deck, and I got roped in through a friend, Leslie Stone, who's one of the trustees, to come on board. So at present there's a lady called Barbara Disley, myself, Anne Stevenson, Leslie Stone and Ruth Foreman, who's been on the trust for a while. It was set up in 97, and it was then called the Hauraki Gulf Charitable Trust. It was set up with some funding out of the Waikato Regional Council, would you believe, at the time. Obviously, their domain covered the Hauraki Gulf from further south. At some point, it moved closer to Waiheke when Don Robertson got involved, and then it's become a bit focused on the island ever since.
Right. So what is the main purpose of the trust?
It's probably easier if I read that from the actual trust document, because I thought that might be the easiest way to describe it. Established for the charitable purposes of preserving the natural environment of the Hauraki Gulf and increasing recreational opportunities for the benefit of the public now and for future generations, to promote, assist and undertake research into all environmental and conservation matters relating to the surrounding land, the islands, the peoples, the waters and the flora and fauna of the Hauraki Gulf and its walkway, and to initiate the implement conservation and education projects and opportunities for the benefit of the public now and for future generations.
Right. So in practical terms, what has the trust been doing?
Well, recently, we tend to umbrella projects on public land. So, for example, we've been closely involved with the Friends of Mackenzie Reserve in changing that reserve from a stand of very old rickety pine trees into more native redevelopment, regeneration, with educational facilities available. Likewise, there's the Totoki Reserve, where we've been helping to improve what was a lot of grass, I guess, for want of a better description. There's the wetlands around by the high school, which the trust has been helping with. We provided the water fountain on the wharf a wee while back. Some of the seating around public areas has been covered by the trust. So we help raise funds for local groups that are keen to develop their local public land. We help them apply from the ASB and various other grant facilities.
And have you got any particular projects coming up that you're raising funds for?
We're just doing some work on probably the one that will be the one that follows the Walking Festival, as well as the ongoing ones that I've just referred to. I think as a group we're very keen to tackle predators on the island and see if we can get the island rat free. You'll have seen the publicity on Great Barrier recently about what they're up to there. I'd love to see kiwis reintroduced back onto the island at some point. It's a long-term goal. To get there, we've got a few rats and weasels and stoats and things to get rid of. There's a lot of that happening privately. There's, I think, some moves higher level, government level, that will help make it happen. We just need to pull a few things together before we can really tackle it head on.
Yes. Can you still get rat bait from the council community board offer there?
It's actually now available through the hire depot on Tahi Road.
Okay.
There's a chap called Andy Spence who used to work for Whakanifa and so on, who brings that in, and it's available through those guys, and you can buy it in a 10-kilo bucket if you want to, or you can buy it in kilo bags.
I suppose one of the difficulties with Waiheke is that it's so close to you know, Auckland from Maraetai, for instance, that rats could probably swim across.
They can swim quite a way. I'm not a rat expert, and I would imagine, I don't know whether they can do that in one hit or whether they gather a ride on a boat or something, but that's all part of, I guess, the overall strategy we need to review to see how we start. I mean, I was involved in an attempt on Te Whau a few years ago to have a crack at it. Unfortunately, the person who was supposed to do the baiting kind of did a bit of a runner, so it didn't quite gain the momentum it should have done. Mm. We're keen to have a go at it again. There's a lot being done already around Whakanifa, the reserves on Te Whau and so on. So there's a protected area already almost, and if we can expand that.
And I think some communities are proactive too. Rocky Bay was very proactive in looking after their spot, their patch of Waiheke.
Yep.
So if everybody does that, we might get some way to the total eradication of.
Indeed. And we just need to form a bit of a strategy and overall what's the best way to do it. I mean, there's obviously debates about using poison. There are more humane traps available from what I understand. And that's the sort of background stuff that we'll be doing before we kind of launch, assuming that we do, an attack on the rats.
Right. And, of course, stoats and weasels are different. You know, they're not easy to track down either, are they?
No, there's...
cunning little devils.
Very cunning little devils, yes. There've been places where they have been eradicated, and we can probably learn from those. Fortunately, we've got sort of contacts that have been involved on Little Barrier and doing the eradications over there. And it's just a case of using the best research and scientific information available, and then making sure you sort of implement that.
Yes.
Quite what funds are involved in that, we've yet to establish, but hopefully there will be some more national funds available that we can tap into.
Yes, I was just going to ask that question, if there's money available from the government, from the Conservation Department or anywhere of that sort.
We're trying to ascertain that through people that are we sort of work closely with. There's plenty of scientists on the island and people who work at the university that can advise us on that. We're talking to them and gathering their input.
Because it's not a cheap exercise, I shouldn't think.
No, it's not. I mean, if you go and buy one of those 10-kilogram pots of just the blue poison, it's not cheap. It's cheaper than buying it in kilogram bags, but it's a bit of an outlay in one hit, as I went to do the other day.
Yes, and of course it's the hours involved as well, isn't it? It's the person power.
Yes, I mean, they're
sort of... labour intensive.
It is, and you've got to kind of plot them. I think it's about one every 50 metres, check them every 2 or 3 days, and then obviously as you start to get rid of them, it's less. Mm-hmm. But if you've got steep bush, of which there's a fair bit on Waiheke, just trying
to... So what do you do? I mean, when you go around and empty the traps or collect the bodies or whatever, what do you do with them?
Ooh, no, that's a good question. I don't know. I was going to say I did what I did with the possum that appeared in my front yard in Airaki many years ago. It was like, what's the possum here? And I got asked where to put it. I just said, well, put it in the road where you find all the dead possums. The dead rats, I tend to just chuck them into the bush because we've got plenty of it just to let them rot away.
Well, that's true, yeah. It's sort of natural biodegradation.
Yeah, I mean, you can probably dig a grave and bury them if you really wanted to, but that's probably going a bit over the top.
A bit over the top, yeah. Yeah, your mention of a possum, I thought, my goodness, let's not start a rumour that there's a possums here on the island again. That comes up every now and then.
Oh, that's always a good one for April Fool's Day along with McDonald's.
Yes, indeed. We're talking to Ian Burrows, and we started off talking about the Waiheke Walking Festival and then got talking about his involvement with the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust. You're the chair of the trust, is that right?
That's right, right. Yes.
Okay. And is that an organisation that needs volunteers, or how do people get involved with the trust? Do you have members? Or is it just a group of enthusiasts?
It's a group of enthusiasts. We're actually looking for at least one more, possibly two more, trustees to help get involved. As I said, we kind of umbrella other projects that come to us and apply for funds that we then assist to raise those funds. Ruth, who's involved at present, is looking to step back, so we've definitely got one vacancy that we'd like to find someone who's keen on conservation and the Hauraki Gulf and kind of sees the vision that I read through that was part of the trust deed. We can have another one on top of that as well. More hands make light work, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so if anybody's interested in becoming involved with the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust, they'd contact you.
Give me a call either on home on 2720, or the mobile is 021-610-074.
Right, that's the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust. So that covers right out to the barrier and all of the other islands, does it?
It's basically the Hauraki Gulf, so it will go that far. As I said, the projects at present are fairly Waiheke focused. I think they started a bit more Waikato focused originally, but it depends on the trustees and who's involved and where it lands up basing itself.
Right.
It's all volunteer stuff, so we're kind of limited by the time that we can put into it.
Okay, and you're involved, the trust is involved in the Waiheke Walking Festival.
That's right, we're underwriting it, so there is a cost to run the festival,
right.
Which we've kind of used previous budgets to look at. We've kind of said, right, well, we will underwrite at this point the cost of the coordinator and getting it to happen, because we needed to pay someone to do it. Jeanette was unable to do it this year, and Denise Whitfield has kindly taken it on. We respected her experience involved in the sculpture on the Gulf Festival last year. So we're covering her costs. There are other costs. As I said, the Waiheke Local Board and Fullers have kindly contributed a reasonable amount of cash that helps us pay the bills. But we've still got a commitment from the trust funds to cover the shortfall. The the less we have to cover, the more we can put into other projects and so on. So we're out there trying to raise further funds from anybody who would like to get involved.
Right. And if anybody out there would like to get involved, either with donating towards the cause or as a volunteer during the Waiheke Walking Festival, which is happening from the 26th of October through to the 3rd of November, they should contact...
Denise Whitfield is probably the best person for volunteering on, as I said, on 7797, or her mobile is 021-071-7213. If you wanted to contribute, there is a button on the website which you can click on and it'll tell you where to go, sort of.
Uh-huh. Well, it'll tell you in a nice way where to go to donate.
That's right, yes. And all donations are gratefully received. We will have a sort of COHA or donation bins for each of the walks. We can't charge for them. That's part of the agreement with the council. Obviously, they're on public land. And the private land ones, there's no charge for as well. The only charges will be your costs of getting a bus or a coach there, and then one of the pub-type lunches that we're trying to arrange as part of the English in Me, which likes to go for a walk to a pub lunch.
What a good idea.
We don't have any pubs, but we have vineyards that can do something similar.
Yes.
And then in the case of EcoZip, there's a Zipwild thing at a discounted price if you want to give that a go.
Oh, right. Yes, that sounds like fun. It's on my list of things
mine
to
too.
Do.
Mine too, yeah.
So you haven't done it yet?
Not yet. No, I've done some over in Wood Hills, but those ones, I think, take you to a whole new dimension.
Yes. Now, Ian, whereabouts can we get the brochures from? You brought a brochure in this morning that's got a lot of detail in it.
Yep. I've brought a pile here, which I'll leave with you. There should be some at the information centre. There are certainly some down on the wharf in the area where you can grab brochures opposite the cafe. There are brochures on the boats. The website does have all the walks detailed in the same level of detail that are on the brochure. You'll probably find brochures in the major hotels around Auckland because I've been dropping them in there for the last few weeks. They're at most of the venues that we're going to be going to. If you can't find one, give Denise a call on 7797 and I'm sure she'll arrange to get one to you. But hopefully you'll find them.
That's brilliant. Yeah. And, of course, I think the walking week coincides with Labour Weekend, doesn't it?
It does, yep. So... the first 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, is Labour Weekend, and then there's walks occurring the week from there to the following weekend, which is the weekend before the Jassy Dean, the following weekend on the 9th.
Well, it's going to be a busy time.
Oh, there's always things happening in Waikiki at that time of year.
Well, it's wonderful.
Mm.
It's absolutely great, yeah. We've been talking to Ian Burrows from the Waiheke Walking Festival, and we're encouraging everybody to get out there and do at least one of the walks during the week of the 26th of October to the 3rd of November. They range in from easy to quite difficult, so there's something there for everybody. There's no excuse, is there, Ian?
No, there isn't. And actually, whilst I've just seen it, because I've just looked at one of the walks that I know is one that Denise is trying to volunteer for, find a volunteer to run, is the Onirua one. We've got two walks planned, one around Rocky Bay and one around Onirua, really just sort of reminiscing and looking at the history. A lady who did it last year, Kate Hastings, is unfortunately unable to do it this year. So if anybody's got lots of history in their mind of Onirua, do let Denise know, because I'm sure she'd love you to lead that one. Involves a stop at the Waiheke Cinema to watch a movie that covers a bit of the Onirua history. So that's a good one to get involved with.
And what day is that going to happen?
I knew you were going to ask that. I'm just frantically trying to find it. Can I come back to you on that one? I'll find it in a moment.
Yes, of course you can. It's probably in here if we both look for it.
It is. Batch to the Future. There it is. Saturday, the 26th of October.
Okay. Ramble. So it's the first day of it.
Kick-off walk time at 3 p.m. Duration 2.5 hours. Start location, Waiheke Cinema. It's a ramble along the streets and byways of Onirua after a short film, History of Holidays on Waiheke. The cinema is itself iconic, furnished with sofas out of people's homes. Listen to yarns of times past. So if you've got yarns of times past to share with people, please let Denise know.
That'd be great. Okay, and this is all happening during the Waiheke Walking Festival from the 26th of October to the 3rd of November.
That's right.
Thank you very much, Ian, for coming in and talking to us about it.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Now, it's my great pleasure to say good morning and hello to Rhiannon from the library. Good morning, Rhiannon.
Hello, everybody.
Right, now you're here to talk to us about what's happening over the school holidays, is that right?
Yeah, we've got a couple of events for children over the school holidays, and we've also got an event for the Heritage Month, which is also during the school holidays, so I'll be talking about all of that.
Okay, so fire away.
Cool. Okay, so the theme for the school holidays in October is Time Quest, and that's the theme across all the libraries across Auckland. And we've created two events specifically for Waiheke Library. The first event is open to any school-aged children, and that's on Wednesday, the 2nd of October at 10 a.m., and that's called Time Trek. And participants who come along to that will be creating a miniature time machine and then boldly exploring an adventure trail through time, travelling to different time periods and hunting through the library and taking part in games that children played in the distant past.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, heaps of fun. So that's at 10 a.m. for about an hour and a half on Wednesday the 2nd of October.
And what sort of age group?
Well, as I said, that's open to any school-age children.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so sort of 5-year-olds and up. And then we've also got on the Friday, the 11th of October, which is the last Friday of the school holidays, we've got a very special event. This is one, this is quite new for us. We've never run anything quite like it on Waiheke. This one is aimed at 9-year-olds and up, so for the older students. And this is called Time Quest Challenge. And though it's a library event, we're actually going to be running this one in the Artworks Theatre because it's got a sort of an acting dimension to it. So librarians from Waiheke and from across the harbour, from some of our Auckland libraries, are going to be coming over, especially for this event, to put on an interactive Amazing Race quest with a post-apocalyptic feel. Yeah, so that's set in Auckland in the year 2379, way off in the future. The idea is it's the end of the world, and potentially the end of the human race, or is it? So the participants are some of the select few who can collect their free time travelers tickets and travel through time to save the human race. So there's going to be heaps of fun at that event, and as I said, it's for the older students, 9-year-olds and up. Tickets are free, but we are hoping to get bookings before the event so we've got a sense of numbers.
And that's at Artworks?
That's going to be at the Artworks Theatre.
And yep. The date again?
The 11th of October, that's a Friday, and that's from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m.
And who's put that together?
I have.
Oh, wow. I bet you had fun doing that.
Yes, I am having lots of fun doing nice. That. Yeah, I've got some helpers. And as I said, I've got some librarians coming over from the city to help me out as well. So that's going to be fantastic.
Right.
We're also going to be running a competition throughout the holidays. So I'll mention that just so people can start thinking. It's a time travelers competition. And the idea of that is if you had a time machine and could go anywhere in time, into the past or the future, tell us where you'd go and why and what you would do there. Then draw yourself or make a diorama or a model, your choice. What would you be wearing? What would the place look like? Let your imagination go into warp drive. And that competition is open for 5-year-olds through to 12-year-olds.
Okay, and that's what over what period?
They can start now if they want to, but it has to be into us at the library by the 12th of October.
Okay, and that's if you had a time machine, where would you like to go?
Yep.
Either in the past or the future?
Absolutely.
Oh, yep. Sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
Was that another one of your bright ideas?
That was.
Oh, well done.
Thank you. So we're also having a talk for the Auckland Heritage Festival, and this is obviously for adults, and it's going to be on Saturday the 5th of October from 4:30 p.m. until 5:30 p.m. And this one is a celebration of Waiheke's Coast Guards. It's called A History of Saving Lives at Sea. And we've got Crew Chief for the Waiheke Volunteer Coast Guard, Rob Henry, coming in to share his insights into the Coast Guard's distinguished history of saving lives at sea. So that's a rare opportunity to gain insights into this vital voluntary service in our community.
Yes, indeed. And what date is that?
That's Saturday, the 5th of October, 4:30 to 5:30 p.m.
Right. Okay. Now, where did you get your inspiration from for these
for the school holiday program. Well, as I said, the Time Quest theme is one that's being run across the whole of the city, and librarians were challenged to come up with something a bit different. We were given the concept of having something set way off in the future at the end of the world, and to create events that fitted in with that theme.
So were there any particular books that inspired you?
Not specifically, though. Obviously, for the event for the older students, I was drawing on, you know, the kind of reading that they're doing. They're doing a lot of reading in the post-apocalyptic sort of genres, things like Hunger Games and all of that kind of stuff. Not that I've used that as a foundation for the event. It's more of a time travel concept. Yeah, just that kind of end of the world kind of scenario is one that they're certainly reading. Right. At the moment.
Yeah. I have read some of Diana Gabaldon's books.
Mm.
That's quite an interesting concept, you know, when she sees the gravestone of her forebears and the date that they died, and then she goes back in time and finds herself back in those days. And,
right.
Yeah, it's quite a fascinating concept.
Well, this one, they're going to be going into the future as well as the past. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yes, well, they can do either, can't
yes,
they?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've hopefully got some artwork from Matthew Muir to set the scenes as well, which is fantastic.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I've got lots of people helping me out with it.
Right. Now, on the breakfast show this morning, I think it was Simon who said that he's going to be part of it as a steampunk. Now, my imagination went a bit wild there. I sort of saw a cross between Boy George and Thomas the Tank Engine, but sure that's not right.
Well, I don't know. The steampunk is been popularised, particularly movies like Hugo, if anyone saw that, had a very steampunk feel to it. And I think what he's talking about there, I think it might have actually been Elida who's doing that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes, well done.
One of the periods we're going to is the Victorian period. And he's obviously playing around with the idea of, because the steampunk is kind of combining the Victorian period with the future.
Okay.
So you have the idea of a future based on clockwork and mechanisms like that. And popularization of things like air pilots' helmets, you know, those leather ones that they used those kind of things with the goggles and all that kind of stuff. So steampunk has got that sort of kind of feel to it, where people get to dress up Victorian but also mix in these mechanical or clockwork mechanisms with it.
Right.
So, he's playing around with the Victorian period, which is one of the periods that we'll be going to in that event.
Uh-huh. And you mentioned that part of it would be playing games from the era.
Oh, that one's for the younger ones. That's in the Time Trek event, yes. So I'm currently investigating Victorian and medieval games for that one.
So what sort of games?
Ah, well, we'll see. As I said, I'm still investigating. But it's interesting, the Victorian period, I mean, a lot of the games they played then have survived to today. But there are some group games that I'm investigating, which will be things that have never been played before on Waiheke, hopefully.
Okay, wonderful.
So something quite new and exciting there.
So we might have a maypole somewhere or something.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Forget that one.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
Is it true? I mean, you may not know the answer to this, but the game Ring-a-Ring-a Rosies, it was somebody said that I read somewhere that it was in the times of the plague.
Yes, absolutely.
And a tissue we all fall down was everybody dropped dead.
Yes, absolutely. That is where that came from.
Okay. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, a lot of our nursery rhymes actually do refer to events in the past, real events, and they have fascinating stories behind them. That's one of them. And Jack and Jill and Jack Horner and In the Corner and all of those have actual historical events behind them. It's quite fascinating to read through.
Is there a book that tells you about that?
I'm sure there is, actually. I couldn't say what it would be called, but I could investigate that for you if you like.
That would be an interesting book to read.
Yeah, it would.
See, the history of nursery rhymes or something of that sort. Yeah, it would be fascinating.
Mm.
It would be fascinating. Now, is there anything for older people, you know, for older children, apart from the competition?
Well, there's the, I mean, as I said, the Time Quest challenge is open to 9-year-olds and up. So that's okay. That's looking at sort of tweens and teens. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Right. So that's an interactive role-playing adventure.
Right. And what is that involved again?
That's the one with a post-apocalyptic feel.
Right.
And as I said, I've got librarians coming over from the city. They're going to be playing parts in the quest that the participants will be going on through time.
Uh-huh. What date is that happening?
That's on the 11th, the Friday 11th of October in the afternoon, 2 to 4pm.
Right. We're talking to Rhiannon from the library about some exciting events that will be happening there over the school holidays. And when do the school holidays start?
They actually start right at the end of September. I think it's Monday the 30th of September is the first day of the holidays.
Right.
And our first event is on the Wednesday the 2nd of October.
Right. And it goes through for...
It goes through to, I think it's the, is it the 12th? Let me just check.
So it's about 10 days.
Yeah, they have 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah. Right. And you've got something different every day.
No, we've got just the two events.
Right.
Yeah. But the competition runs throughout the holidays.
Right. Okay. So the two events are on every day.
No.
Do they run concurrently? Or?
No. The Time Trek event is on Wednesday the 2nd of October. And the Time Quest challenge is on Friday the 11th of October.
Right, okay. So those two particular days for that particular challenge.
Absolutely.
And I guess that during that time, your usual littlies.
Yeah, our story times don't stop. They go all through the year. The only days we don't do them is if it falls on a statutory holiday. So the preschool story times will be going right through the holidays.
And remind us what days they're on?
Those are on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 a.m.
Right.
And they're about half an hour.
Right. That's great. And what's the hot book at the moment that everybody wants to read of you? Is there one or...?
Well, there's always, I mean, everyone's got different reading habits and interests and focuses, so all sorts of books are hot at the moment. Now, I'm going to completely go blank on the author's name, but there's The Illuminaries, which has been shortlisted for the Man Booker Awards, so that's really hot at the moment. We do have a What's Hot copy for that, if anyone wants to come in and grab it right now. Otherwise, you need to go on quite a long waiting list for that
right,
one.
Right. And what genre is that?
It's historical. It's set, obviously, it's a New Zealand book. It's really amazing that she's shortlisted. And she's probably pinching herself right now at the idea that she's even pitched to possibly win.
Wow.
So that's a one to definitely look out for. Yeah.
When will we know the outcome of it? It's the Man Booker part.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure when that comes out. I'll have to do some research on that. But I was just talking about it with someone yesterday. So, yeah, it's quite a weighty tome.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a big book, but apparently stunningly written.
Right. Oh, well, good luck to her. That being a Kiwi
absolutely.
Person, that'd be great. Do you find that the trend for what books that people come in and ask for has got any connection with what might be happening on TV or what might be happening, say, for instance, with the America's Cup, if there's the interest in yachting has gone up or anything like that sort?
I can't say that I've noticed interest in yachting going up, but I can say that if a movie's about to come out, then if it's based on a book, the book goes supernova popular. I've seen that happening time and time again. It happened with The Lovely Bones many years ago. It happened with The Hunger Games more recently. Twilight series, of course. So quite often if the movie is being made, suddenly interest in the book skyrockets.
So people read it before they go to the movie?
Yeah. There is a desire for people to read the book before the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. Well, we've been talking to Rhiannon from the library and particularly about the exciting school holiday program that's coming up. And just to recap on that, Rhiannon, just give us the dates and the major events again.
So Time Trek for any school-aged children is on Wednesday the 2nd of October at 10 a.m. And Time Quest Challenge, which is for 9-year-olds and up, is Friday the 11th of October from 2 to 4pm, and the event for adults for the Heritage Festival, A History of Saving Lives at Sea with Rob Henry, is on Saturday the 5th of October from 4:30 to 5:30pm.
That's great, and it's a terrific innovative program.
Thank you.
I think kids are going to have a lot of fun with that.
Sure.
So, thank you for your creativity and your excitement in getting it all together.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rhiannon.
Okay.
Wakey Radio. Now it's my very great pleasure to say good morning to Dan Harrop. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Jan.
And welcome along.
Thank you.
Now, you've come to talk to us about what I think is a fantastic initiative that you and your fiancé have started called Holiday Helpers. Tell us something about that.
So Holiday Helpers, the idea came from when we first moved to Waiheke. We're thinking of moving to Waiheke. We realised that it's a beautiful place. It's like paradise. But not everyone gets to experience it. However, there are lots of holiday homes which go vacant a lot of the year, particularly during winter when they're just sitting there and not being used. So the idea was, why not use those holiday homes as a base if people would be kind enough to volunteer them, and then build a beautiful sort of package around it with restaurants and everyone else, the local community, supporting a free holiday for people who really needed it. And the people who we thought needed it were families with sick children, usually terminally ill, very seriously sick children, or bereaved parents who were going through such a hard time in their lives and couldn't afford a break like this. But we were able to package something up for them which would make a real difference to their otherwise really tough lives. So that's where it came from.
That's a brilliant, brilliant idea. Was it sparked by something that happened in your family or among your friends?
Luckily I don't, and I count myself really lucky that we don't have anyone in our family, sick children. My auntie was born with some pretty bad disabilities, but she lives a really fruitful life. It was more out of when I was in the UK up until the end of last year, I saw a show on TV, which I think they show here, called Secret Millionaire. And it was about a couple who had a daughter who died when she was 20 of cancer. And her her last words and wishes to her parents were, if you can do something for me after I passed away, it would be to make the lives of children just really happy, and to do something which, because she spent so much of her time as a child having cancer and not enjoying life as much as she should. And so her parents then bought a house in Blackpool in the UK and designed it to be hugely kid-friendly, where parents and families could come and use that house as a holiday retreat. So I saw that and thought, it's an amazing idea, why not use that on Waiheke in a slightly different way?
Right. So how did you go about doing it, setting it up?
So we're in the UK, so it was pretty hard. But luckily my friend Cam Bauer, who co-founded it with me along with Liz, was able to be the guy on the ground here. And it was really much simpler than I thought it would be. First of all, we used our family batch in Oneiroa as the first base for our first holiday. So that was good having that. We didn't have to get a house. And then I just got on the phone, and so did Cam, to restaurants, Oyster Inn, for example, Essence Beauty Therapy in Oneiroa, and many other sponsors, and just said, look, this is what we're doing. Could you give your time or your produce to this? And they were just so unbelievably generous. It was, just such a breeze to talk to these people, and they just got it straight away.
That's great. So you now have a network of people with properties and with goods and services.
Yeah, so properties, we use our family batch. We use our guest accommodation, the Point on Burrell, as another property. We also use my auntie's property. So we're a bit limited, if I'm being honest. We've got 3 or 4 properties, and we're trying to get more so that we don't put a lot of pressure on 1 or 2 people, i.e. us. We've got amazing restaurant support. Y Kitchen, Oyster Inn, Stony Ridge have volunteered. I'm probably forgetting a few right now. But so we've got restaurants. What we probably need more of, I guess, is volunteer people. So people who just want to give their time to help organise these things, because a lot of it's down to me and I've got a full-time job. Right. Cleaners, that's one area where we could really do, because every stay needs a good clean, and it's a real big cost. But transport, I mean, Waiheke Auto Rentals are just great sponsors. They're one of our really good helpers. They've given a car and free petrol, so that part of it's taken out, and they're happy to keep supporting. Fuller's and C-Link, brilliant. So it's been really humbling how many businesses on Waiheke are just supporting, but there are areas where we could really obviously use more support.
Okay, so if anybody's out there and would like to volunteer to help with cleaning or other assistance, they would ring you?
Yeah, well, probably the best way is to just sort of give me an email, because then I can see what on the email they think they could help with. And, you know, if it's open-ended and you don't care what you help with, you just want to be involved, that's fine. My email is harrapdan@gmail.com. And if they email me, that'd be great. We'll work out from there. I think the other point to note, Jan, is that we've done three, which we feel really proud of, because each one of them has been unique and so rewarding. But with more help and more resources and more, you know, of people just wanting to get in there, we could do more than two a year, which is what we're starting off. We're being realistic with at the moment, because it's just a few of us. We're saying, let's build that up. But for now, it's just sort of low numbers, I guess.
Right. Now, the Harrop is HARROP.
That's right, yeah.
So it's harrapdan@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're talking to Dan Harrop about the Holiday Helpers initiative that he and others have started to allow people in difficult circumstances, perhaps through illness or bereavement, to have a break on the island for a few days. Now, how do you find these people? Where do they come from?
We're really fortunate. We work with an organisation called Immune Deficiencies Foundation New Zealand, also called Kids Foundation, based over in Auckland. And the CEO, main organiser, whatever you like to call her, Janet Simons, she's a fantastic woman. She is helping us basically by referring families to us. So rather than us going out and seeking families, we take all our referrals for families in need through her, because she deals with, you know, very sick children and families that she knows the background of, who would, like I said before, wouldn't otherwise be able to afford a holiday like this, or even any holiday, and she knows how much strain they're under. So we basically get the referrals from her, and we learn a bit about the family so we can tailor the holiday to that family. And then the rest is just all about making sure everything's perfect, 100% free, 100% comfortable for them, so that it's a real amazing healing, I guess, process for them. And that's how we get the referrals.
Have the people that have come over so far, I think you said there's been three lots, have they all come from Auckland or other places?
No, they've, in fact, one's come from Auckland. The others have been from the South Island. Oamaru was one. So they've come from all over, which is fantastic again, because two of the three families hadn't even been to Waiheke. And when they get here, I mean, it's like us. We're fortunate because we see it every day, but we still get amazed, don't we, like how beautiful it is. For them, they get here and they just think it's paradise. And it's just, you know, going to, again, those restaurants I mentioned, like the Oyster Inn, for a beautiful meal, that is such a treat. Sue Jones at the Essence Beauty Therapy said, when I approached her, she said, "Dan, this is an amazing initiative. I'll give them anything they like." And I said, "Well, hang on, we've got to be, you know, what limit are you going to set?" He said, "No, here's my menu of services. They can choose whatever." So the second couple we had, who had a bereaved child, a five-year-old child who died, I didn't know this until they arrived, but she was pregnant with her next child, which was just so amazing when she arrived with her partner. And she went up for a mother-to-be massage with Sue. Wow. And, I mean, that's just so perfect, right? So that's sort of the impact, if you like, that Waiheke makes, and the businesses and the people that we live with. That's the impact they make.
Mm, that's terrific, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really great. Good, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And it's just the therapy she needed, I would think.
Mm,
yeah. So you've quite had a fairly lengthy involvement with Waiheke, have you?
Yep, coming here in different respects. I've been coming for probably 20 years on holidays, but it's only since the start of this year that my fiance, who's from England, I managed to talk her to come back to New Zealand, and we bought a house, and so we've been living here as permanent residents since January. But like I say, I've been coming for so many years, enjoying as a whole, and that's what, you know, convinced us that why not live here? Why not have it every day rather than just summers?
Yes, exactly. So do you commute to town?
Yeah, I got a job in Parnell with Xero Accounting Software, and they, because it's in Parnell, it's a really easy commute. Love it. You know, have your coffee, as we all do when we're commuting to Auckland. So, so easy to do, obviously, every day, and that's what keeps me busy during the week.
Indeed, and keeps the money rolling in, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking to Dan Harrop about the Holiday Helpers Initiative that he and his fiancé and friend have set up that offers free holidays on the island for those in difficult circumstances, probably through illness of a child or bereavement or something of that sort. Dan, is there any cost in running this initiative?
So There obviously is costs in terms of the businesses. There's no disputing that it costs money to provide these meals and provide cinema tickets or provide cleaning, whatever it is. So there are costs. We know that. But what we're sort of saying is, if we can get a free, someone would give up their holiday home as a base, that's the biggest cost. And then people like Fullers and SeaLink, again, huge costs of getting the car over or the passenger ferry, they will cover those. But for the family itself, our number one principle is they shouldn't have to spend a penny. So, for example, on the day before that our families arrive, I'm off to Countdown, and Countdown gave us amazing vouchers for food. Get all the food for the three or four nights that they're here, stock up their fridge. So when they arrive, they've got breakfast for three mornings, they've got lunches, and then, of course, they might go out to dinner to have a real treat with one of the local restaurants who's provided. So there are costs, but it's all about the local businesses taking those costs on, and hopefully they're not too much of a burden for them.
Yes, that's right. Well, I would think that the positive feedback that the couples or people would give their friends and family when they got home would more than make up for the cost of providing a meal or a massage or whatever.
So we hope
people to come over, and this is the best advertising, isn't it? People talking to people talking to people.
It's
probably a relatively cheap form of advertising when you think of it in that sense.
It is. And I think another thing to mention, Jan, is if you look on our website, which is www.holidayhelpers.co.nz, on there is a thing called Holiday Stories, which has at the moment two of the three family stories that we've had, and the next one that just stayed a week ago is going to be added. But if you look on those holiday stories, you will see too the impact that these things have had, these restaurants, these whoever it is, these providers, people like myself, because those testimonials after they've had the stay of how they've felt and what it's meant to them, that to me rules out any cost, because it's so good to see how much impact it has. It makes me feel like it's all worthwhile, basically.
Mm, absolutely. It's a terrific initiative, Dan, that's for sure, for helping people that are going through a tough time to have a break somewhere beautiful like Waiheke, and without it costing them anything. So if there's anybody out there who would like to help in whatever way, the best way is to contact them, contact you by email.
Yeah.
And your email address is harrapdan, that's H-A-R-R-A-P-D-A-N.
Oh, O-P, sorry. H-A-R-R-A-P.
Oh, sorry, yep. I knew I was going to do that. harropdan@gmail.com.
At gmail.com.
So it's harrapdan@gmail.com, and the Harrop is H-A-R-R-O-P. I hope that's got over loud.
I'm very glad you've spelt that out clearly, Jan, because we had an article in Waiheke Marketplace, and it was a great article, but at the end, unfortunately, had a contact Dan on email at dan@gmail.com. I forgot the Harrop, which is a little bit of a shame, because not at dan@gmail.
That's the email I tried to get you on first up, and then I ended up going online and onto your website and found it that way.
So people can still find me. That's a good thing.
Yes, and the website address is
holidayhelpers.co.nz. That's
right.
It.
Okay, well, we wish you every success with this, Jan. That's a great initiative, and thank you for doing it, and thanks for coming in.
Thanks for inviting me, Jan.
A pleasure.
You've been listening to the Interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7pm and Thursdays at 12:30pm. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.